Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping into a book that honestly feels incredibly relevant.
Oh, absolutely. It tackles something I think pretty much everyone experiences now.
Right, that feeling of just being driven.
Yeah.
By the digital world. Mm. Always overwhelmed, always feeling the need for just like a moment of quiet.
That exact feeling. It's the core crisis explored in the book we're discussing.
Yeah.
Robert Hassan's Analog, Reclaiming Temporal Sovereignty in the Digital Age.
Okay, Reclaiming Temporal Sovereignty. I love that subtitle. It sounds almost revolutionary, doesn't it? Just wanting control over your own time.
Well, Hassan argues it is revolutionary because this isn't just, you know, bad time management on our part.
Uh-huh.
He says humanity is facing a profound temporal crisis. And it's driven by digital acceleration.
Temporal crisis. Wow.
Yeah. So our mission today is to unpack that loss of temporal sovereignty, basically our agency over our own time.
And then crucially, how we might get some of it back using this idea of the analog.
Exactly. How embracing analog ways might be the key.
Okay. Let's get into it.
Yeah.
Who is Robert Hassan? Why is he the person to guide us through this temporal mess?
Well, he is a pretty distinguished academic, professor of media and communications.
Okay.
And his background isn't just in one field. It spans sociology, media studies, political theory.
So a broad perspective.
Very broad. And analog isn't just a quick thought bubble. It's based on decades of his research into what he calls the digital condition.
The digital condition. I like that framing.
And specifically technological acceleration. He's been looking at this stuff for a long time.
So he's not just offering like tips for digital detox.
Right.
It's deeper than that.
Much deeper. What makes his view unique, I think, is how he frames digital speed. It's not just faster gadgets.
Right.
He sees it as a fundamental shift in power,
yeah.
Specifically concerning temporal politics.
Temporal politics. Explain that a bit.
It's the idea that controlling time, deciding whose time matters, who sets the pace, becomes a really profound form of social and political power.
Ah, okay. So who controls the speed, controls the people? In a way.
That's a big part of it, yeah. He's looking at the underlying structures that dictate how fast we live.
That reframes things completely. So if our time is being controlled, what's the core argument of the book, Analog?
The main premise is this. The digital revolution hasn't just changed how we do things. It's fundamentally restructured our experience of time itself.
And that's a threat.
A major threat, he argues. To our well-being, sure, but also to democratic processes.
Ow.
He talks about chronopolitics. That's the deliberate use of time manipulation, think speed, constant interruptions, the demand for instant responses as a form of social control.
Wow. So me feeling like I have to check my email constantly, that's not just me being neurotic.
Hassan would say no. It's a successful manipulation baked right into the design of these systems.
That's unsettling.
Yeah. Right. So the book acts as both a diagnosis like, how did we get here, temporally captured, and also as a prescription. A guide for how to resist actively.
And the resistance, the solution he points to, is this idea of the analog.
Yes. But crucially, he's very clear. It's not about nostalgia. It's not about going back to, you know, old tech for its own sake.
Right. It's not just collecting vinyl records, although maybe that's part of it for some people.
It could be. But the core idea is embracing analog processes, things rooted in natural human-scaled rhythms.
Human-scaled rhythms.
Yeah, using those as a counterbalance to the relentless digital pace. He calls it the analog turn.
And that's a political act.
He frames it exactly that way, a deliberate strategy to restore dignity, agency, and even democratic participation. It's about building a more meaningful future, not just escaping the present.
Okay, let's dive deeper, starting with the diagnosis. What's actually driving this speed, this acceleration that's, well, stealing our time?
He links the whole digital condition back to something he calls cognitive capitalism.
Cognitive capitalism. Okay, unpack that for us.
Right. So in this economic model, the primary source of value isn't physical stuff anymore, like factories or raw materials.
It's information.
Exactly. It's our attention, our clicks, our data trails, even our emotional responses online. Value is extracted from our minds, essentially.
So when I'm scrolling through a social media feed, my attention is literally the commodity being sold.
Precisely. You are the resource being mined. And the system needs speed to maximize that extraction.
Oh, okay.
That leads to what he calls the logic of acceleration. Every single notification, every real-time update, every demand for an instant reply, it's all designed to enforce speed, instantaneity.
Because faster engagement means more data, more clicks, more value extracted.
You got it. This economic imperative for speed is what really defines the digital age, according to Hassan.
But lots of people just see this as like a personal failing, right? Mm-hmm. I just need better time management skills. Why does he say it's a crisis?
Because the speed itself has profound consequences. It creates temporal compression.
Temporal compression.
Yeah.
Meaning time feels squished.
Yeah, exactly. And when time gets compressed like that, our ability to engage in anything deep or sustained just evaporates.
Right.
It leads to fragmented attention, constant decision fatigue, you know, deciding which notification to look at first, and what he calls a thinning of experience.
A thinning of experience.
Yeah, like we're just skimming the surface of everything. News headlines, emails, even conversations. We're constantly reacting, not reflecting.
I definitely recognize that.
Right.
Trying to read something important while also half listening for Slack pings.
Yeah.
You just don't absorb it properly.
That's the thinning right there. You lose the capacity for deep thought because your brain is always primed for the next interruption.
And this isn't just about personal productivity, is it? He connects this to bigger societal issues.
Absolutely. This constant pressure, this thinning of attention, doesn't just mess with our personal lives. It erodes social and political structures, too.
How does speed hurt democracy? You'd think faster communication would help political engagement.
You'd think so, maybe. But Hassan argues democracy fundamentally requires democratic temporality.
Meaning?
Meaning the slow time needed for actual reflection, for genuine debate, for building consensus. Speed destroys that.
Okay, I see.
Think about how politics works online now. Complex issues get boiled down into viral sound bites or angry tweets.
Yeah.
Micro-targeted ads are designed to provoke instant emotional reactions, completely bypassing any kind of reasoned discussion.
Right, like a complicated piece of legislation can be killed off by one misleading meme that goes viral before anyone has time to actually read the details or push back effectively.
Exactly. There's no time for the slow work of fact-checking, nuance, or considered dissent in that environment.
That's why he has that line.
Yeah, that really stark line. Democracy dies in the space of a notification. The constant interruption prevents the sustained focus needed for informed citizenship.
Wow. Okay. And it gets personal too, right? He talks about intimate temporalities.
Oh, this is so relatable for probably everyone listening. Digital speed, especially through messaging apps and social media, completely reshapes our expectations and relationships.
How so?
There's this unspoken, maybe sometimes spoken, demand for immediate responsiveness, constant availability, 24/7.
Yeah, that pressure. If you don't text someone back quickly, you feel guilty, or maybe they feel slighted. It feels very transactional sometimes.
It does. And Hassan points out this puts enormous temporal pressure on our connections. Real relationships need slow time.
Slow time.
Time for vulnerability. Time for just being together without an agenda. Time for thoughtful conversation. Even time to be bored together.
Not just quick updates.
But instead, we're often forcing our relationships into this anxious, immediate digital rhythm. And he argues that undermines their quality, our ability to really connect.
Okay, so the diagnosis is pretty clear and,
yeah,
frankly, a bit grim. Digital acceleration, fueled by cognitive capitalism, is messing with our attention, our democracy, our relationship.
Pretty much, yeah.
So let's pivot to the solution, the analog. How does he actually define analog when he talks about it as this, like, restorative practice?
He defines it less by the specific technology and more by the temporal logic. It's about practices that prioritize human-scaled rhythms.
Human-scaled?
Yeah.
Like the pace of walking or conversation?
Exactly. And importantly, embodied experience. He contrasts the flat, uniform, disembodied feel of a glass screen with the multi-sensory richness of analog things. Think about the actual feel of paper, the smell of an old book, the tactile nature of gardening or cooking.
Right, things that engage more than just your eyes and fingertips.
Precisely. These practices root us back in the physical world at a human pace.
And this is where he introduces that fascinating idea of good friction. Which sounds so counterintuitive today, doesn't it? Everything is about being frictionless.
Totally counterintuitive. He basically takes the goal of seamless UX design and flips it completely.
So friction is good.
Good friction, he argues, is essential for a meaningful life. The effort, the resistance, the necessary slowness or delay involved in certain analog processes.
Yeah.
That friction forces us to slow down, to be present, to actually invest ourselves in what we're doing.
Okay, but wait, isn't that just making things difficult for the sake of it. Like, should I choose the slowest possible route just because it's slow?
Huh. No, that's a fair point. It's not about seeking out all inconvenience. It's about intentional difficulty that yields meaning or depth.
Okay, exactly.
Think about learning a musical instrument or baking bread from scratch or mastering a craft. It takes effort, right? There's friction.
Definitely. Lots of it.
But that effort leads to engagement, skill building, deep satisfaction. It's the opposite of just passively consuming a frictionless digital feed.
Right. So the time and effort it takes to, say, develop film from an analog camera creates a different kind of value and memory than snapping 100 quick digital photos.
Exactly. That effort is part of the value. It forces presence and intention.
So what kind of practices fall under this analog turn?
Things like meditation, slow food movements, crafts like knitting or woodworking, analog photography, even just writing letters by hand.
And deliberately switching off digital devices.
Yes, deliberate digital detoxing, creating tech-free times or zones. These aren't just hobbies, in his view. They're intentional acts of temporal resistance, ways to reclaim agency.
Okay, let's try to crystallize some of the main takeaways then, the really big messages from the book.
Sounds good. Let's start with that political angle again.
Temporal colonization. That's a powerful phrase.
It really is. It's his core diagnosis. Digital platforms are designed to systematically take over our time and attention for their own algorithmic goals.
They're not really selling us a service.
They're selling us our time, our attention to advertisers or other data users. Their goal is maximizing engagement, keeping you on the platform, not necessarily your well-being.
So that feeling that your phone is constantly trying to grab your attention, it's not just a feeling. It's the system working as intended. Your attention is the resource being extracted.
Just like older forms of colonization extracted natural resources.
Yeah. Okay, second big theme, the value of friction.
Right. That friction isn't just an annoyance to be smoothed over. It's the necessary effort that actually creates deeper engagement and meaning.
Like the difference between passively listening to a playlist and actively choosing a record, putting it on, flipping it over.
Exactly. That intentional inconvenience, that little bit of effort, forces you to be more present and often leads to greater satisfaction than just effortless consumption.
Makes sense. Third theme.
Attention as political territory. This is crucial. The fight for our attention isn't just about productivity. It's a fight for our consciousness, our agency.
So choosing to disconnect, even for a short while, isn't just self-care.
It's a political act. It's resisting cognitive capitalism and asserting sovereignty over your own mind.
Wow. Okay, so deciding to put the phone away and read a physical book isn't trivial. It's like a small act of defiance.
He would argue, yes, absolutely. And finally, perhaps his most radical idea, the need for temporal rights.
Temporal rights.
Yeah.
Like the right to not be interrupted.
Kind of. He suggests we need to start thinking about rights to attention, rights to rest, rights to uninterrupted contemplation.
Protected by law.
Just like we have rights to privacy, he argues our temporal experience, our time itself, needs similar protection in this digital age.
That's a huge idea. This shifts the burden from just individual willpower to collective action and policy.
Precisely. It provides a framework for demanding systemic change, not just better personal habits.
The book is full of these really punchy ideas. Should we share a few of the most memorable quotes?
Definitely. They really capture the essence of his argument.
Okay, you go first.
How about, time has become the last colony.
Oof. Yeah, that really lands the point about control and autonomy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Our consciousness is the new frontier being exploited.
It does. And then there's the one we touched on earlier about democracy.
Democracy dies in the space of a notification. Just highlights how constant interruption kills the slow reflection needed for informed participation. Chilling, really.
And to counter the idea that this is about rejecting progress, he says, analog is not about returning to the past, but about reclaiming the future.
That's so important. It's not anti-technology. It's pro-humanity. Using analog practices as tools to build a better future.
Exactly. And the call to action, connecting to the rights idea. The right to time is becoming as essential as the right to privacy.
Which really frames it as an urgent issue for society to grapple with, requiring maybe new frameworks, new laws even.
Yeah, new ways of thinking about human rights in the digital age.
Okay, so theory is great, but how do we actually apply this? For someone listening right now, feeling that pressure, what are some practical first steps?
Hassan suggests starting personally, but with structure. First, maybe do a little temporal audit.
A temporal audit. like tracking my time.
Yeah, just honestly looking at where your time and attention are actually going, where the algorithm's sucking you in. Awareness is the first step.
Okay. Painful, maybe, but useful.
Then consciously create analog zones, or maybe a digital Sabbath, like strictly no phones at the dinner table or in the bedroom, or maybe for a few hours on the weekend.
Creating pockets of time free from digital demands.
Exactly. Creating a clearing, as he might put it, for different kinds of thinking, different ways of being present.
And what about at work? Because that's often where the pressure is most intense.
Professionally, it's about pushing for temporal boundaries. If you can, advocate for things like designated deep work periods with no interruptions.
Fewer meetings.
Yes. Reduce unnecessary meetings. Limit the expectation for instant replies, especially after hours. Shift the focus from constant reactivity to thoughtful, focused output.
It's really about shifting from being a passive consumer of whatever the feed throws at you
to being an active, intentional chooser of where your precious time and attention go, reclaiming that agency from the algorithms.
So wrapping up, what's the one thing that really stood out for you from digging into Hassan's work?
For me, it's the powerful reframing that our relationship with time is ultimately a choice.
A choice we can make.
Yes, both as individuals and, importantly, as a society. He kind of lifts the guilt associated with disconnecting or slowing down and frames it as necessary, even responsible.
Right.
Realizing that reclaiming this temporal sovereignty isn't just nice to have, it's maybe essential for maintaining our humanity and our democratic potential. That feels huge.
I agree. And for me, it's that shift in perception, reframing slowness, not as inefficiency, but as a virtue, as a source of depth and meaning. That's a really powerful counter-narrative to the dominant culture of speed.
It really is.
So the challenge I'd leave everyone listening with is this. Think about how you can introduce just one small act of deliberate friction into your day tomorrow.
Deliberate friction.
Yeah, something intentionally a bit slower, maybe more effortful, more material. Could be cooking a simple meal from scratch instead of ordering in, writing a short thank you note by hand, or just reading one chapter of a physical book without your phone nearby.
Take back a little piece of your time. Make it count on your own terms. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.